From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Greetings, Thetans, and welcome to a clear edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am your host, Hunter Miskovich, and with me is my trusty sidekick, Stuart Cruz. Say hello, Stuart.
I'm OT8.
Excellent. And also joining me is John Travolta.
Yes.
Say hello, John.
I am optimistic. Totally optimistic.
Oh, John Travolta. He of the Cuckoo for Coco Cox. John Travolta.
Yeah, that guy.
Well, yeah.
John Travolta is quite a dancer.
Everybody knew he was gay in the 70s when his former boyfriend like ratted to the Enquirer.
Yeah.
Well, and there are a lot of stories about him at the gay clubs in New Orleans and stuff.
Oh yeah. They were always around.
Yeah.
His fondness is black men and Arab men.
Are you serious?
Yeah. No, he's got a thing for Arab men as well.
That's so weird.
Ooh.
Show me your Turkish Scud missile.
The Scientology references abound. Obviously, the movie we are doing is Battlefield Earth, right?
Never again. God.
Doing Battlefield Earth? Anybody?
I've seen it four times. No more.
You've seen it four times?
Yeah. Why? I brought it up on the show last time I watched Battlefield Earth again. I was like, fourth time. I'm like, this is horrible. Never again.
Were you a member of Scientology, Stu?
Never. Never. I did get approached by a guy on the street here, probably about 4 years back, who was just in this sort of fabricated utopia of happiness, saying how Scientology's cured him. I'm going, that's nice. I mean, that's the, you're holding
cured him
up.
Of being gay, or
no, I don't know. Just he unleashed his inner Thetan, I guess, and he was quite happy.
So actually, the movie we're doing is After Earth with Will Smith and Jaden Smith. That's the movie we're doing, right?
No, actually, we're doing the entire series of My Name is Earl.
Oh, shit.
the Scientology TV series. Yeah.
No. All kidding aside, we're doing Alex Gibney's documentary, Going Clear, which is based on a very good book by author whose name I forgot to look up. But I'll have that for you in a second. But it was produced for HBO, and it was kind of a big to-do. Like, it was
huge.
You know.
Yeah. It was a huge deal.
Yeah, it was. And the book is by Lawrence Wright, and it's called Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief. And it's quite a good book. I highly recommend it. And
I've not read it. I've only seen the doco, but I do want to read it. I really do want to read it, yeah.
If you have any interest in Scientology from a morbid perspective and not from a, gee, I really want to join a religion perspective, you should read it. In fact, actually read it if you want to join it too, so you will be, you know.
Well, the interesting thing is Lawrence Wright wrote the book that's like the know-all guide to Islam, which is The Looming Tower.
Oh, really?
Yes, he wrote a book. They didn't pay much attention to that. They didn't make a documentary about that. They made one about Scientology, but apparently he's got a big one about Islam, which is The Looming Tower. And the radio host Hugh Hewitt always grilled his guest by asking them if they'd read The Looming Tower.
Have you read The Looming Tower?
None of them had. It's literally, have you read The Looming Tower? Like, it's mandatory reading to understand the Islamic threat.
No, I got to read that now because Going Clear is great.
Yeah, it is. And also I will bring it up.
And he also
the
has
show.
A book called he also has a book called The Terror Years from Al Qaeda to the Islamic State.
Yeah, it's probably a follow up to The Looming Tower.
Yeah, it looks like that. Anyway,
he's a man with a death wish. Pretty much.
he wants Miskovich and ISIS to come after him.
Yeah, pretty much.
Apparently.
Yeah. No, I was gonna say I will also reference Leah Remini's book, which I think is just actually compulsive reading. In the stakes of the Scientology world, it's a must. But I'll bring it up throughout the course of the show. for sure.
Yeah, but that's a good point, John, that this gets a documentary. Looming Tower, not so much. Cannon Sight hate.
Yeah, exactly.
What was it? You see that Scientology music video in the documentary. Yeah. I don't think I saw a non-white face in the crowd.
No.
it's like a Mormon gathering. Well, when I was at a library sale years ago, there was three boxes of Scientology audio tapes and CDs that I could have just grabbed for like probably $10. Could have gotten
Why would you want to?
Yeah, I know.
I was like, I was thinking about it because I was fascinated by how weird they are. But
yeah, the thing is, apparently, according to Scientology, John, by the time you've gotten through those 20 tapes, there'll be another 20 more you have to go through.
Right. It's like obviously they send you through an M.C. Escher drawing of knowledge seeking or whatever. It's a pyramid scheme cult, basically.
Oh,
well, and what's insane about Scientology, like, what was it? This guy in the documentary made a really interesting point. He goes, you go up to anybody from one of the three Abrahamic religions, like, you know, Christianity, Judaism, Islam. You ask them what they believe in. They could tell you in a couple minutes. They don't give you any of that in Scientology until you're like way in the hole.
You've invested about $1 million plus.
Yeah, once you're like hundreds of thousands of dollars in with them, they tell you, "Oh yeah, so we all came from trillions of years ago. There was a god Xenu and dropped humans into volcanoes on Earth." And
it's funny because they used to be able to sue everybody, and after the South Park episode, suddenly they weren't as powerful because I think the internet kind of weakened them. She had a lot of ex-members. You know, start with the
precursor to the alt-right, the 4chan group going after them.
Yes. 4chan. Yeah, they met their match. Basically, technology seemed to outwit them. And they're such a strange outfit because when you look at it, they look like you look at the people they put on video to represent the church and they look like they're 20, 25 years behind on the times.
Yeah.
Just in their dress and everything.
Well, they all look like they like all their gatherings and stuff that they show video of. Like, they even said it was a fascistic display. It does look like Triumph of the Will. You have these glorious stage setups and, you know, these guys who look very fashy walking up and getting speeches.
With fashy haircuts.
Yeah, with fashy haircuts. All that was missing was fashy glasses.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yep.
You know? All you needed was those Goebbels glasses or...
Oh, gosh.
The monocles.
Well, it's like they're... The main guy that they profile, the current leader who kind of took over after Elrond quietly passed away, and what took him like 2 years to admit he was dead or something.
I know he's like Castro or something.
Well, the guy talks in the neuro-linguistic programming type of speak, NLP as it's known in the modern world. It's also used by pickup artists. And he and Tom Cruise kind of talk that way. And they, like when they were talking about how Tom Cruise like emulates this guy, like dresses like him and does the haircut and talks just like it was just really odd stuff.
Yeah. Yep. He's I've read a lot about this guy and seen a lot of videos about Scientology. Not pro ones, obviously. A lot of anti-Scientology ones and... yeah, haven't met too many people with good things to say about him. That's for sure. Especially the defectors like Mike Rinder and there's a lot out there. Look, honestly, go to YouTube, go to the channel Xenu TV, which is run by Mark Bunker, who is basically public enemy number one with Scientology. And the stuff that guy's got in there is freaking mind-blowing. So highly suggest you go check out Xenu TV, all one word, on YouTube.
And that's Xenu with an X.
That's correct. Z, what am I doing, Stuart? X-E-N-U-T-V. But it's one guy with a bit of balls on me. He'll stand there and stand in the middle of Clearwater, Florida and preach against Scientology where basically the whole fucking town is Scientologists. It's kind of like it harkens back to Halloween 3, Hunter, when I was talking about Scientology.
Yeah.
It sounds like that town of whatever the hell it was.
That town.
I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah. Where the Silver Shamrock Company is.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, this documentary, it's obviously a critical look at Scientology. It was produced by HBO, directed by Alex Gibney, who he's done like tons of documentaries. He did Enron, Smartest Guys in the Room, We Steal Secrets, the WikiLeaks movie.
Oh, was that him?
Yeah.
I still need to see that.
Yeah, he's done a lot of stuff I haven't seen. Like, oh, he did Client 9, the Elliot Spitzer documentary.
Oh, yeah, I have seen that one.
He did the he produced the Hunter S. Thompson Gonzo one. Taxi to the Dark Side is the first one. Enron was the first one I heard of, but he did Taxi to the Dark Side. But yeah, this is the first movie. This is a movie of his, a recent one. He was recently on the Bret Easton Ellis podcast.
I gotta listen to that one. I gotta seriously listen to that show because you guys are always talking about it. I'm like, I don't listen to celebrity podcasts, but which I've now, as you know, I've changed my tune on a bit. So I will give it a listen.
Yeah, give it a listen. He has a lot of good guests. Like, he had John Carpenter on recently.
really?
So, John.
Was Carpenter playing video games?
Yeah, Carpenter was like, sorry, I just gotta beat this, I just gotta no scope this noob in Call of Duty.
The Carpenter wasn't as open about stuff as I thought he'd be.
No, it was kind of short, to be honest.
It was the vague Carpenter. Like, he's probably got no endurance. I mean, you've seen how many cigarettes
he got Peter Bogdanovich to talk a lot. Like, Bogdanovich was like, Ellis was asking him his opinion on filmmakers, and he'd be like, this person, he'd go, and like, he'd be like, so William Friedkin, be like, I don't like him personally.
I haven't listened to that one yet.
Oh, Bogdanovich there's a lot of stuff Bogdanovich says that's annoying to me. Like,
he's always been annoying.
I kind of never really respected him because of how he left Polly Platt when he got famous. Like, he.
Yeah, I don't respect him at all. I think he's a shit.
Like, yeah, I think he's a piece of shit. But it's a fun interview just because, like, he doesn't really care. He'll talk shit about anyone. It's funny.
Well, he's burned a lot of bridges.
He really has.
He's one of those guys where, like, maybe a quarter of Hollywood will still give him work if he needs it, but he's burned so many bridges.
No, and he even talks about, like, and you know, he's pretty open about, like, really dumb shit he said. He'd be like, you know, like, he'd be offered this movie, and he'd be like, well, if we're going to do that, why don't we just do this, you know? You know.
Jeez.
My only
complaint about Ellis is he's too stuck on 70s movies.
Yeah, he really is. He thinks they're the best.
Yeah, you got to quit acting like Taxi Driver is the greatest thing ever made.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those phases you get out of in your 20s, you know.
Yeah, like, and he's the thing is, he grew up in that era of seeing R-rated movies in the theaters. I think in the late
70s. Right, so he kind of has that nostalgia for it.
Right, but he acts like that's just this great innovative time. But that sort of, and I've said it before, the 70s decade was super overrated because it's like that little burst of artistic defiance or whatever with, you know, down endings and dark tones. It doesn't last long.
Even Bogdanovich pointed out that Chinatown did not make money. He said it was
right.
But yeah, like, I think that was one. He was offered Chinatown. He goes, well, if we're going to do Philip Marlowe, why don't we just do Philip Marlowe? You know?
Well, he's got a point.
And he goes, Roman's such an egomaniac. He's like, well, if I can't play the detective, I'm going to fuck up his face. Make him wear this stupid patch on his nose the whole time.
Yeah, it makes sense. Because, I think The Long Goodbye is a better detective film from that decade.
They talk about that in the movie.
Night Moves with Gene Hackman is better. It's way better than Chinatown.
I haven't seen it.
It's really good.
No, of
Night
it.
Moves.
No.
Yeah, way. Night Moves is tremendous. I mean, you can get the Warner DVD pretty cheap, I think. But it's like, that's a far better movie than Chinatown.
Do you guys ever see a film that Hackman did with, was it Pacino, called Scarecrow?
No.
I know of it. I haven't seen it yet.
Good movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of those movies nobody ever talks about that Pacino and Hackman and all those guys made.
Oh, my God. The one I brought up before in the past was Straight Time with Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's an ignored film. It's based on the Eddie Bunker.
Yeah, it's one of the best crime films of the 70s, and that's saying something for that period.
It was on Netflix for a long time. I don't know if it still is.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I did watch, just real quick, I did watch the the Blu-ray of Goodfellas, the new remastered one, and man, looks good. Film still holds up after all this time. Got to say that much.
I'm gonna resist ripping off Anthony Cumia and doing a ton of
do Goodfellas lights. What are you? We have half a fag. Yeah.
Hey, this dog's looking one way. This dog's looking the other way. And I'm in the middle of going, what do you want from me?
Well, Jay Moore always did the Ray Liotta. That was all the money we had, Karen. Karen! Karen, what'd you do with the money, Karen? That was all the money we had.
There's no way they could have found the coke at Karen.
It still holds up really well.
It is one of those films. It's like, it's great art.
Oh, I can watch that movie anytime, anywhere. Like, it's one of those movies. Yeah. It's on TV. I'll sit down and watch the whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
It's great. But anyway, Scientology. But so this documentary, it has a lot of interviews with ex-members. A very prominent one is Paul Haggis.
Yes.
The director of terrible movies like Crash and In the Valley of Elah and The Ride of Terrible.
Bitter liberal prick, basically.
Oh, I hated him for the longest time. Like, I still hate him, but I have a little bit of respect for him for this.
Yeah, I don't like him at all.
But he did co-write Casino Royale, which was okay, but, you know.
Yes.
Not okay. That's a really good movie, but.
He also wrote Quantum of Solace, which is a piece of shit, so.
Yeah, that movie sucks. So that kind of undid it.
Of his left-wing trademarks. Yes, ooh, Bolivian water. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, I know. He did a lot of writing for Clint Eastwood, like Million Dollar Baby and Flags of Our Fathers, and you know.
Flags of Our Fathers is not that good. I watched that.
No, it's not. Sands of Iwo Jima.
Patriotism is bad. What?
Sands of Iwo Jima wasn't terrible, but
the only Clint Eastwood film I've liked that I've seen the last, I can't think how long, has been Jersey Boys.
I like Jersey Boys.
I didn't see it.
I like Jersey Boys and I like Gran Torino. That's about it.
Oh yeah, I've not seen Gran Torino yet. Gran Torino's fucking great. Yeah,
Gran Torino's
I've heard nothing but good stuff about it. I've got to get onto it. But Jersey Boys, I really liked it. I like
Jersey Boys a lot.
Yeah,
I liked American Sniper, but you know, I liked it the way I like Rambo First Blood Part 2. You know,
is it like that?
I mean, it's kind of that kind of movie.
Yeah, I keep meaning to check it out of the library, but I have to be in a mood to watch something like that, you know?
Yeah, it's a good action, you know, kind of.
If it's easier to just put a Bowery Boys movie up on streaming, I'm just going to do that instead of watching the serious Oscar winner.
Horrible Bela Lugosi movie with the black kid did it called Spooks Run Wild. It's like they just didn't get it back then.
Oh, boy.
Imagine doing... You know what? Garrow and us should just redo Spooks Run Wild with a bunch of some crusty old fucking actor and a bunch of black kids and just see how far we get.
Is Martin Landau still alive?
You get Clint Eastwood. Get out of here, you little spooks!
Oh, that's right. He's got a movie in theaters right now.
Oh yes, Sully. Yeah, I've heard a bit about it, but I don't particularly want to know.
Yeah, I'm not really terribly interested. I hear it's good, but I'm just not super.
What's with all the biopics he's doing these days?
Well, he doesn't want to do superhero films, and
I can't blame him for that.
And when you're an older director, I think you get more respect, like David Attenborough doing Gandhi or whatever, is like by doing these biopics. Like that's where the Oscar and the claim is.
Yeah,
and those are more like the movies I think somebody like him wants to do instead of just doing more thrillers or whatever. You know, he's kind of done all he can do when it comes to suspense thrillers.
No, it's the best biopic Clint ever did.
What's that?
Bird.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Good. Oh man, long. It's a long investment. It's about nearly 3 hours, but fantastic movie. Old Glass Eye. What's his name? Keep forgetting. Forest Whitaker, yes.
Maybe there's a Thetan in
dude,
there.
Dude, Battlefield Earth is basically the whole cast of Scientologists.
The got it. Yo, so is Barry Pepper?
Barry Pepper is, Travolta, Kelly Preston.
Yeah, I knew Kelly Preston was in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she's been Travolta's beard for like 20 years.
She has. It's John's right.
Well, no, that's the same role held by, these women Tom Cruise supposedly dates. You know?
Oh, yeah. That's a total salary thing. You know.
Oh, and for the record, people out there who have not read Leah Remini's book, which I'm going to reference quite
a bit. Why is she in this movie? She should be in this movie.
In Leah Remini?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why she was not in it. I can't remember. I think at the time she was just getting out of Scientology and, you know.
She's a pretty recent defector, isn't she?
She's one of the more, you know, sort of top-end ones who got out and really. Like, if you read her book, she even. Because you know how Scientology come after people who've left the church and they call them suppressive persons and all that sort of shit? Well, she starts her book off by saying, I'm an apostate, and lists all her bunch of sins that she's done over the years.
Well, was it if she was on Loveline back in the 90s?
Yeah, with Carolla. And
and Carolla had made fun of Scientology a lot, and they got letters from the church like, you know, saying like they had an apology for him to read verbatim. He just like made fun of it.
She was really weird back then because I heard that one.
It got brought up on her interview, and she was like, "Well, it does a lot of good for people," and you know, she was kind of hectoring Carolla about it. You know,
yeah, but she's like she wavers between getting really angry and laughing, you know, sort of half-heartedly at Carolla's jokes. Carolla's a fucking screaming that episode though. He was killing me. He was that funny, but but her book, she does not have many nice things to say about Katie Holmes. Let's say that really? Much. She, you know, this apple pie all-American girl, she ain't that. She's basically a B-I-T-C-H is what
she is. If you wanted to dispel the apple pie American girl image, all you had to do was watch The Gift. But, the Sam Raimi film. Because she was like Cruz, she was a Catholic who defected to Scientology, but she defected for Cruz when she, you know, joined his whatever. But so what does she say about Holmes that's like?
It all stems from the wedding that Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes had in Italy. And basically, Leah Remini and her husband were invited along only because Leah Remini was best friends with Jennifer Lopez. So for the star power, they wanted to have Jennifer Lopez come along as well, but obviously that she wouldn't come at the behest of Tom Cruise because she's not a Scientologist. So they were basically like, you know, just asked to come along just to bring Jennifer Lopez. Now, there's a big section in her book where she talks about the big wedding dinner and all that sort of thing. And how was Suri born at the time? Then the baby, I don't remember.
I don't remember. I don't read Us Weekly that much.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's been a little while since I've read it, but there's something about the baby crying on the floor, and all these Scientologists people just standing around watching the baby cry, and Leah Remini's like, pick the fucking baby up and look after her. And it's there are lots of things and seating arrangements, like really petty shit, seating arrangements. And then, all sorts of shit came up. And then, Katie Holmes filed a, whatever those reports are. Oh God, I've forgotten what they call them. I'm sorry.
It's like a, it's not an audit. It's something else. Yeah.
No, audit's something that happens after.
Yeah. Audit's like a procedure, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So whatever report's called, I'm sorry. I've forgotten. She filed one of those against Leah Remini and her husband just for basically nothing. So she's not the nice girl that she's painting out.
She's a bridezilla.
Bridezilla, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But also, yeah, it goes into a lot of stuff about... let's just say, I think I've said it before on the show, Leah Remini does not like Tom Cruise. It's pretty evident from her book she does not like him because the guy is a... tyrant.
Well, I mean, he's basically Miscavige Jr., you know?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Scientology is built around Tom Cruise. Miscavige may be the main guy, but Tom Cruise runs that whole fucking place. Because if he left now, I'm telling you, if he left the church now, I use the word church very loosely. If he left Scientology now, the whole place would crumble. It'd be gone.
But don't they have a ton of real estate assets, though? You know, Like, they have a lot of money.
Honey, you can have real estate assets, but when you got nobody there, the numbers for Scientology they are dwindling. And going clear did not help them at all.
No, yeah, their numbers are, like, at the end of the documentary, they said their numbers are way down. Like, they don't even – they have, like, less than 100,000 people.
Yeah. And I think even that number would be really stretching it.
But let me point something out about Scientology that's always bothered me from when I first looked at it. It's rustled me, guys, is that their symbol is a crucifix.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Why? They don't believe in Jesus. Why do they have a crucifix for their symbol, this gleaming crucifix?
Probably the resurrection of L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, because I think the whole thing's based on cribbing from different religions. So I think they crib certain symbolisms and the whole story of the Xenu and the Thetans and all that, you know, it's probably cribbed from some altered version of Shintoism or something. You know, it's I think that's what L. Ron Hubbard had told science fiction writers like Harlan Ellison, like, this is what he was going to do. He's just going to combine a little bit of Christianity, some Judaism, some Islam, some Shinto, Buddha, take all the best things and make like one religion. He'll make a lot of money, you know, and that basically is what Scientology is. But when he developed, as it developed, I think it kind of became its own crazy thing and even more insane than what was originally conceived. Like, because he had that problem with psychiatrists or psychology and
it seemed to be built around like a rejection of psychiatry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Psychiatry.
Because all that stuff was huge.
In psychiatry. Like,
that stuff was huge in California in the 70s, probably from the 40s and on. Like, psychology was a big, big thing in places like California. Like, you know the Harvey Milk story? You know the whole Harvey Milk case?
Sure.
Where he was shot. Okay, he was shot by Dan White, and the mayor, George Moscone, was shot by Dan White.
Yep.
Okay, and Dan White got off on a pretty light sentence with the Twinkie defense and everything.
Yep.
And documentaries and probably Gus Van Sant's movie, which I'll never see, will probably act like that was homophobia on the jurors.
Oh, yeah. They act like he's Martin Luther King or something.
No. What actually happened was in California at that time, they believed anything a psychiatrist told them. Oh, yeah. Twinkies? Okay, I get it. It wasn't homophobia. The target was George Moscone, the mayor. That was the...
Yeah, it wasn't Milk, If you watch... I mean, the film Milk itself, I like it, but you're right. It does tend to, you know, play up the whole, it was a homophobe-based killing. Whereas if you watch the documentary, The Times of Harvey Milk, that is not so much the case.
Yeah.
Which is by far the superior telling of the Harvey Milk story and one that I highly recommend.
Yeah, I would say that's probably better than any film with Sean Penn that's, you know, got an agenda. Like the documentary was
Well, the documentary doesn't have Sean Penn, so that's a big plus for a start.
Right, that's a huge advantage. But also, you know, it's San Francisco's not that far from Marin County. Which, you know, there was also a film in 1980 called Serial that Paramount released with Martin Mull and Tuesday Weld that made fun of those people because they were so nutty and into, oh, my psychiatrist and my therapist said this and my new age, you know, crystals are saying this. It was, like, there was that whole population seemed very susceptible to cults and wacky things. Yeah. And,
Sammy Davis Jr. joining Satanism.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Anton LaVey's Church of Satan was in San Francisco. I'm sure Scientology had a big chapter in that area.
Was it Jim Jones based out of California originally?
Jim Jones came out of San Francisco. Most of his church members were black, and he preached mainly
Harvey
Marxism.
Milk was a big fan. He was a big Jim Jones fan.
And Jim Jones preached Marxism. It was basically a big socialist thing.
Well, even Jim Jones said he didn't believe in Jesus. He said he was just using it to push communism.
Yeah, and he was like, he was strange. He was like a closet homosexual, and he had a terrible. He sounded like Daffy Duck if you actually listen to the real tapes. He wasn't this magnetic speaker. He sounded like Daffy Duck or Sylvester the Cat.
Have you guys seen that Obama video when he says "Yes, we can" and it's played backwards?
No, don't.
When someone's taken Obama's "Yes, we can" and looped it backwards, it comes out saying "Thank you, Satan." Look it up. There's quite a few of them on YouTube.
I think that video That was pretty big about 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what you hear if you loop Hillary spitting that green globule into a glass of water.
That's
backwards.
What you hear when Hillary talks. It's thank you, Satan.
I think Illuminati types are even throwing that video around.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
She's spewing out her lizard juice.
The lizard people control us all.
Yeah.
That, like, there was that thing on Drudge about the pearl in her ear. It's not something to feed her lines, guys. It's just so she can understand English because she speaks reptilian overlord. Yeah. That's the language she speaks.
Clintzilla. Yes.
Right. She's like Dennis Hopper in Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah. What's that, King Koopa?
Yeah, King Koopa.
Oh, boy. All right. And on that note, we will take a break and be back in a moment.
Do you desire to add yet another entry in the endless legion of film review podcasts to your playlist? Can you not stand the thought of having any moment of your dull, pointless waking life intruded upon with the sounds from the real world and would prefer to listen to a small cast of assholes talk about movies? Then
they must be destroyed on sight!
Probably meets your bare minimum requirements. Join Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest hosts as they talk about films from every genre, ranging from the obscure and schlocky to the well-known top dollar classics. Look for
They Must Be Destroyed on Sight
on iTunes, Podbean, YouTube, and Facebook. That's
They Must Be Destroyed on Sight.
Okay, and we're back.
So, Scientology.
Yeah. I want to ask you, have you guys ever looked at Dianetics?
No, never. No.
I read Battlefield Earth many years ago when I was a kid.
Well, all of it?
Shit.
That is a big ask.
That book was marketed to kids because a lot of science fiction at that time, unless it was a Star Wars tie-in novel, you weren't really getting that kind of ray guns and robots type science fiction.
Mm.
You know, cyberpunk was starting to get big and all that stuff.
Hey, and, John. Man is an endangered species. That's the first line in the book and the film.
Well, the book is like, it's like a 50s pulp novel stretched out to 1980s fat, you know, airport bestseller length. And it was, and also its size was part of the marketing, I think. Like, this is the big science fiction epic, you know, that's bigger than all of them.
So it wasn't like 1,200 pages or something, that thing?
It is a crazy amount. I read the whole damn... I think it was like 900 pages.
Yeah, it might be about right. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like 900 pages. And, like, there'll be these kind of jokes like, oh, it wasn't really a bestseller because basically all the Scientologists were just buying multiple copies. That's not true at all. It was actually selling really well.
Okay.
Because of its size and the cover, and it promised this type of sci-fi action that you just didn't get out of sci-fi paperbacks at the time, you know? Because everybody was into that Larry Niven, Jerry Pournelle, you know, that was the type of, you know, Oath of whatever, you know, type Lucifer's Hammer, that sort of big intellectual science fiction or scientist science fiction.
Yeah.
You know, stuff written for engineers. This was, Battlefield Earth was for kids that wanted action and stuff just like, you know, Star Wars and all that crap.
Yeah. When did that first come out? Was it 80? 83,
I think.
83, yeah, it sounds about right.
83, 84. Mm. I got a paperback in 84, I remember.
Okay. Yeah. But, Dianetics, I flipped through it in a bookstore just to have a look at it. And it's like, oh, God. That image of the volcano exploding on the front, that's your fucking head after fucking two pages. Because it's insane. It just, you know, because it was always just meant to be a self-help book. That was basically it, wasn't it?
That's what started it, I think, was Dianetics.
Yeah. It's meant to be a self. Because I've often wondered why. Okay, look, if somebody wants to follow Scientology as a belief, I get it. But I've never got why they need to pour in thousands and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars into it.
Because they want your money.
I know they want your money, but I'm saying you don't need that with Christianity. I mean, yeah, okay, you might donate to the church here and there.
You know, they 10, encourage 20, you to donate. That's about it. You can go to church and not give anything.
Oh, yeah, totally, yeah.
Nobody will fuck with you.
No. They won't place three people outside your house if you are, you know, defect from Christianity to another religion.
No. And they don't even encourage your family to cut you off, you know?
No.
Nobody cares.
They don't. That's
they
a
just
good
go,
point.
Oh, he fell away from the church. Oh, I'll pray for him. You know, that's about it.
Again, Leah Remini's book, I just cannot recommend enough. Get her audio book if you can as well, what that she reads, because she reads that thing. She sounds like a feisty lady to begin with, you know, Brooklyn Italian, but she reads that book with some venom and fucking spitfire, I'll tell you that much. She's doesn't hold back. But yeah, either read her book or listen to her audio book for more into that. But yeah, I flipped through Dianetics 20 years back. I'm like, it's not for me, you know. Others, sure, but just not for me.
But isn't it like one of the things that was really creepy about this movie was the images of the parties put on for Tom Cruise and how everybody is there to basically smile and just worship him.
Yeah. Yeah.
As he dances around and does
I told you, Tom Cruise is the complete focal point of that place. As I said before, if he left it bye-bye, they crumble. All they've got is their friggin' assets and their few remaining, you know.
Well, if he turned on them, if he turned on them, it would be a PR nightmare, you know. But because you know, but oh my god, those interviews with him. Remember when Mission Impossible 3 came out?
Yeah.
And how he was pushing Scientology hard during the press for that movie.
Yeah, I think that was a serious miscalculation on his part. And I know it really is believed to have hurt War of the Worlds when that opened.
Yeah, those were two movies where Tom Cruise was doing a ton of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And he had these movies coming out, but he was just talking about Scientology. And he was just lecturing Matt Lauer about psychiatry and stuff. And wearing these turtlenecks. He looked like Steve Jobs.
That's the one I was going to ask, was that the turtleneck sweater interview?
And he's sitting there like cackling like a madman.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, yeah, and he said something weird about Brooke Shields because she admitted she was on.
That's right. Yeah.
Psych meds and he's Brooke. You know, he's doing that weird kind of. It's the problem with when you get extreme into that NLP way of talking. You sound like the world's like craziest real estate salesman.
I believe the Jezebel crowd calls it mansplaining.
Yeah, it's like a total manipulative way of speaking. Like there's, you know, it's like your words are manipulative in themselves. You know, it's strange. It's a very bizarre thing to witness. And it's such a, it makes for such a phony human being. And that's what makes him look even worse on those interviews. He's just so contrived. Like when he's on Oprah's show and he's jumping on the couch that he's in love with Katie Holmes. Oh. It's like, you know, straight guys don't do that. They just don't do it.
It seems like you're just signaling at that point.
I mean, so, like, as a straight guy, Katie Holmes is a nice piece of ass, but I mean, you don't jump on a fucking couch on national TV about it.
Right, exactly. She's cute, but come on. It's like you're Tom Cruise. You can bang anything if you're super straight man, you know?
Or if you're into Greco-Roman wrestling as well.
Right.
If you remember stories from the 90s.
Oh, yeah. For 15 years, I mean, he was probably the top box office draw or top star. If you thought big movie, it was Tom Cruise, and all women thought he was cute. All men thought he was cool, I guess. I was never a fan. Strangely, though, I've liked some of his recent movies, and I hate admitting it because of his Scientology creepiness.
Only movie I've liked of his was Losing It. And that was pre-Scientology, I believe.
That was right before he married Mimi Rogers, I think.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I liked Jack Reacher, and I liked the last two Mission Impossible, surprisingly, because I didn't like the first two at all.
I never saw the third one. There's the Jack Reacher sequel that he's doing as well.
Yeah, it opens like this month or next month.
It's called Jack Reacher Round.
Jack Reacher.
You've had that in your back pocket, Steve.
Oh, for about the last 2 seconds, yeah.
He got that from the last Friars Club roast, you know.
Yeah. But I will
Uncle Milty had a schlong so long.
I will say, you know, Tom Cruise, even though he's like a midget, like I don't have really a problem with him as a performer because he's in good movies. Like Jack Reacher's a good movie. The Mission Impossible movies, you know, not all of them are good. The John Woo one's fucking terrible. Like Tom Cruise looks like he looks like a midget on wires in that movie. But but you know, but like Mission Impossible 4 was a really good action flick, and I think he's a really solid performer when it comes to movies.
Mission Impossible 2 should be called Mullet Impossible.
Yeah.
It should be called Why Didn't I Look Like Chow Yun Fat in This Movie Impossible?
Yeah, because Chow Yun Fat never had long hair like a hippie.
The problem is the Tom Cruise movies, though, is I'm watching Tom Cruise. I can't separate. And I come back
I get that.
And I
get
can't.
That.
I come back to Goodfellas when I watched that the other night. Of course, I'm watching De Niro and I'm watching Joe Pesci, but I'm watching their characters because I'm so immersed in what they do. I'm watching Jimmy Conway and I'm watching Tommy, whatever his name was.
Tommy DeVito.
DeVito, that's it. Yeah. You know, with Tom Cruise, I'm watching Tom Cruise.
No, I get that, and I agree, but I'm always impressed by what he brings to the table in stuff like Jack Reacher and stuff like Mission Impossible 4. You know, I'm watching him going, you know, he's doing a really good job, even though I'm not thinking, oh, that's Ethan Hunt. I'm thinking, that's Tom Cruise.
Did you guys see Oblivion at all?
I did.
I don't know if I saw that.
How was it?
I liked it. Here's the thing. I liked it because it was – and again, it's Tom Cruise. He's Tom Cruise, whatever. Mm. But it was a science fiction movie. It was fairly predictable, but it was visually very interesting. So I was never bored during it, even though like I kind of could tell where it was going. Like, you know what was a good one though was Edge of Tomorrow. I thought that one was a lot of fun. It was basically Groundhog Day with way more like – death and aliens and stuff.
I made it through half of Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I checked out from the library and watched like half of and never finished.
No. Nah. Why don't you check out Dianetics out when you're there next time at the library, John?
I don't know if they carry it. They may actually make a thing about that.
Oh, okay.
Well, the Church of Scientology needs to write a letter to them.
I have like a box set of the main religion, books on the main religions, like each one is for the subject. It's Catholicism, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Protestantism, and Judaism, and there's no Scientology there, so I'll consider it probably not worthy of research.
Oh, there's a new John Travolta movie out called I Am Wrath.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's on
Blu-ray. Travolta doesn't have much of a career lately, does he?
Nope.
He does straight-to-video stuff.
Well, one,
I thought From Paris with Love was a lot of fun.
Oh, that was, you know?
Yeah, it was.
Yes, I did enjoy that quite a bit. I Am Raft, a film by Chuck Russell. Okay, yeah, pass, I think.
All these has-beens. Yeah, on Netflix, there was a straight-to-video movie with Travolta and De Niro. Never thought I'd see the day.
No, that's right.
It used to be they'd have to get Joey Travolta and somebody the last name De Niro.
Joey Travolta was smart enough to go into films where he banged down Nicole Smith. He was like, I don't give a fuck about hanging out with Pacino and De Niro. I want this big, fat, pilled out girl instead. I get me some of that. No, don't blame him. I would have done the same.
Yeah.
Hang around two crusty old Italian men, you know? I don't give a fuck.
He probably had more fun on the set, I'm sure.
Oh, of course, yeah. Why not? Yeah. Yeah, you look at De Niro with his half-paralyzed face, or you can look at Anna Nicole Smith with her half-pilled-out face. I'm like, well, you know, I know where I'm going. Yeah. You misogynist pig, Stuart.
But yeah, Travolta's too old to be a draw. Like, millennials don't care about John Travolta.
No.
Yeah. No. Guys who remember John Travolta as a star, too old to go to the movies.
You know what John Travolta's motto is in life?
What is that?
I like my hair color how I like my men.
God. Yeah, his
jet black, nigga.
Oh, God. He's he uses the same hair dye as Peter Steele.
Yeah.
He's always
Pete Still's hair color these days is like corpse white.
He's always been Vinnie Barbarino to me. So that's when he got involved, which is weird.
You know what? I bet if you dug up Peter Steele, he'd look like Bobby Liebling does now.
Oh.
But in better health than Bobby Liebling.
Did you hear about I know this is a total fucking tangent, but did you hear about the recent Pentagram tour?
No.
So like – wait, John, was that a yes?
No, I haven't heard about it.
Okay. So like
– John even knows who Pentagram is. He's like,
so there was some outrage on the internet because Pentagram Bobby Liebling invited a couple of he invited a couple of bands on tour, and there were bands fronted by women.
Right.
And Bobby Liebling commented that he invited them because he wanted to have options.
What's wrong with that?
I mean, sexually.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? Yeah. What's wrong with that?
And everybody was like, oh my God.
Well, his wife left him, so I mean, he's got to have something, you know?
She has, because he's fucking nuts.
Why did people think Alana Miles was opening for Robert Plant in 1990?
But it was just funny because, but I think the bands pulled out because they had no idea. You know, they were like, you know, they saw.
I mean, like Joe Walsh opened for Stevie Nicks because he was banging her.
Oh, of course. I'm not saying, but it was one of those things where the bands were like, they didn't have any, you know, they didn't know him.
Oh, yeah. They didn't approve of those comments.
Yeah. They were like, what? You know, so, but it was still like, you know, even if that's the case.
Well, fucking
Pentagram, the sexual harassment tour.
Yeah.
Well, if I was in a band, I'd be taking out like Hailstorm.
Yeah,
because I care about Hailstorm, but I do care about Lizzie Hale. I'd be like, yeah.
Well, I speaking of bands, I went to the Riot Fest in Denver.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and saw the reunion that they were calling Punk Rock History, which was Danzig reunited with Jerry Only and Doyle and Dave Lombardo on drums and some guy's name I can't remember on backup. I think it was backup guitar.
Dave Lombardo was on drums.
Yeah, but it was considered the original Misfits reunion, even though it's not really the original Misfits.
No, it's really not. It's just the kind of core.
They couldn't patch Robo in from Mexico on drums.
Nah, that's what I was hoping. Maybe they couldn't get his RoboQuit.
RoboQuit.
Right, but yeah, I saw them. I was not far from the stage either, and I mean, you could see the shows have been. Camera phones were everywhere, so there was like 100 uploads on YouTube within hours of me getting back from the show. That I posted a few on Facebook, and it was a good set. It was kind of Danzig forgot some lyrics and pretended to lose his voice, and but it was pretty good. And you got that weird between song banter of Danzig where he's like, "You like these pumpkins that are up on the stage?" He goes, "Yeah, they're pretty fucking cool. Wouldn't you like to have these on your yard for Halloween?" And then your neighbors complain about them, and you say, "Fuck you, motherfucker! I like these fucking pumpkins."
Someone needs to build like a dancing garden gnome to stick in their front yard.
It would sell.
It would totally sell.
Be the same size as Danzig. Too.
Exactly, that's my whole point.
I was hoping he would have a devil lock, he did not do the devil lock or the makeup.
I think that's horse shit. He needed to do the devil lock.
Yeah, he should have at least done the skull makeup.
Something.
He's shown some willingness to go back to the leg, but obviously he had not been rehearsing the songs that much.
I saw the picture. I saw the pictures, and he was wearing like the Danzig belt. I was like, no, dude. You know, put on the Skull and Crossbones T-shirt. Fucking like do a devil lock. Do something. Like do something.
Yeah,
he
wasn't committing to this reunion as hardcore as the other guys have always been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like he was up there as Glenn Danzig, singer of Danzig. You know.
Basically,
right. It's just,
but I'm still jealous as fuck. You got to see that. You know, don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not
this really is like there were guys. It's funny because the guys in the audience that I was talking to, they were young. They were like, "Oh, I love this band when I was 12, 10 years. You know, I'm 28. It's like, but there were people who had driven there from like Minnesota, 14 hours.
Shit.
There were like there were like hot girls in the audience. I'm like when I was listening to these guys, like in the 80s, early 90s,
that was girls skunky glue heads, basically.
Girls did not listen to the Misfits at all. Nope.
It's dude, like, it's strange.
Dude,
I go to metal shows and stuff, and I'm like, where are people finding these girls? Because
yeah, I was like, where were these women when I was?
That's like, yeah, I, black.
Well,
metal.
I'm just like, where are people finding them? Because I need,
yeah,
jeez, like I went to see Uncle Acid and the Deadbeats, and it was just beautiful women everywhere. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, you know? it used to be I'd only go to see the Cramps. That's the only punk band where you would see hot women there. It was the Cramps. That was it.
Yeah, because they all love Poison Ivy. That's why.
Yeah, they idolize her. They're all the Betty Page types, you know, into the vintage cheesecake stuff and everything.
Yeah, totally.
Like, yeah, they like you would always see hot girls at Misfits shows.
Pictures taken of themselves, you know.
Right, right, and never any other band drew hot girls. And yeah,
oh, Motley Crue did. Oh no.
Well, that's like the hair stuff though. That's different.
Okay.
That's the hair metal. They're a hair metal band. But like when I saw the Misfits the other night, it was like, good lord, where were these girls when I was young, dumb, and full of cum? You know,
and I went to Paul Bearer and Baroness, beautiful girls everywhere. You know, I've been to a bunch of shows lately, and it's ridiculous. I mean, okay,
that's
Black Sabbath.
Because they knew that Hunter from the MMC was going to be there. Like, well, we're not here for the band.
Oh, we know that.
I'm here for the man.
Of course. That, now I went home by
down,
myself.
Motherfucker. That weightlifting podcaster we hear about all the time.
Of course. Of course.
It's the manliest podcast.
It's the podcast answer to Mr. Oh.
Oh. It's the baloney pony.
We hear
we
he's
got
it
hanging,
helmet.
You know. You know, that's what we're ready for. Yeah. The dripping, you know what I mean?
yes. Anyway, Scientology, let's get back.
Yeah, I was about to say, we need to get back on topic, y'all.
Feel the hand of Xenu saying, talk, motherfuckers.
I know, the hand of Xenu is hanging over this episode, dude.
Really?
Yeah, we could get our first cease and desist from this.
Yeah, we could.
No, oh, maybe 10 years ago. I don't know about now. It's like,
yeah, well, they don't seem to have much power, so.
No.
But you know, I was pretty like, but I was sitting there going, how did they get away with some of this stuff? I mean, I know how they get away with
they
it,
deny
but like,
it.
They deny it and they have the people so brainwashed that they won't admit to it. And the people who do admit to it, they, you know, gaslight the press over it. But like that stuff about the hole, like where people clean the bathroom floors with their tongues and play musical scares to Bohemian Rhapsody, like that stuff was like, oh my gosh, like how does this happen?
Yeah, how can that even be legal? But then California was this crazy petri dish in the 70s of cults. Like it's just like we know about Manson and we know about the screw ups, like, you know, Jim Jones, but. Mm. It's like there were a ton of cults in California at the time, and that's how they were able to grow. And I think they just, you know, as the documentary showed, they just found all these loopholes in the law about getting away with all this stuff.
At least with the Manson family, you got to live out in a ranch somewhere.
You're obviously listening to Beach Boys music all the time.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know.
Dennis Wilson would hang around, you know.
You know, go to grab a plate to something to eat, and there's Manson hiding in the cupboard. That's why they found him. They arrested him in a cupboard.
but yeah, no, it was just California was a wacky place, and somehow Dianetics spread. I remember their weird reps would always hang around Newbury Street in Boston because they had a Scientology center over in Newbury. And
I've been there.
They'd want to give you some IQ test or something. Hey, have you ever been tested?
Oh, yeah. That's what the guy said to me when I saw him out the street.
You would see them every day. And it's like, oh, and I was like, no thanks.
They had a functioning center in Memphis, I remember, and it closed after Isaac Hayes died.
Oh, really?
Oh, probably the only... okay.
I never got that. I never got why somebody like Isaac Hayes would go into it. And the only logical thing I could figure out was... obviously closeted gays like Travolta would join because if a newspaper wanted to say you were gay, these guys would sue the hell out of the newspaper for you.
Yeah, they would. Yeah.
They'd protect your reputation and give you a beard wife and, you know, kids you'd barely take care of, because Travolta's, I think the autistic kid died, right?
Yeah,
he did.
Pretty much of neglect from everything I've heard.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, no,
there's a cease and desist right there.
Yeah, he's like, but no, it was like it was a neglectful death. Like, the kid just ate ice cream and played video games all the time.
Who's his dad?
Well, and it sounded like that there was a lot of, like, weird neglect in the church.
Yeah, you know? It's like they don't know how to raise kids, basically.
Well, they basically separate the children from the parents. So you only see it for maybe an hour a week.
And that's... And that is psychologically monstrous.
It is. Yeah, that's just fucked up.
That's a reason to send the SWAT teams in and bust the place up. Yeah. Like, I was kind of against attacking the Branch Davidians the way the ATF did, because a lot of shady stuff there. But I'm like, why don't they do that to Scientology?
The Branch Davidians with Dave Mustaine.
Yeah.
That's their leader.
That's right.
Yep. No, not Dave Mustaine, but, Koresh looked like Mustaine quite a bit.
But yeah, I was even thinking it was them. I was like, is that guy in Megadeth? Well, the coverage came around.
Fucking guy was not a bad guitarist either, David Koresh. No, he can rip on the guitar.
Mm-hmm. Hey. He's a metalhead.
One thing, like you talked about Travolta's kid, they have no idea how to raise kids. You know, the Church of Scientology often encouraged their members to get abortions.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, your devotion is to the church. If you have a kid, it's going to, cloud your,
Because it's a financial drain, because then the church has to pay for those kids.
Exactly.
Money over to the church. So
it's not about the people. It's about the money,
Yeah. Money.
So when you put...
Ooh, Robin, money, I'm going to start a religion.
When you put money before human lives, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you're a toxic thing now.
And Hubbard was a shit. He wasn't even that good of a science fiction writer. Well, I mean,
he was total hack.
Yeah, and I have a collection of his pulp stories I bought on Kindle for like $1 or something. Where you get like 500 pulp stories by L. Ron Hubbard.
Dude, you're contributing to the church. What's wrong with you?
I don't even think it was Bridge Publications. I think this is somebody who got the right. That's a lot of that stuff's in public domain.
Okay.
So
yeah, because you wrote a lot of pulp stuff.
Tons of
like. If you read the book Going Clear, they talk about his phony expeditions.
Yeah, I was going to say, somebody mentioned, I think it might have been Xenu TV brought up a mini documentary they did about Hubbard, and they said that according to all these expeditions, the guy should be about 175 years old. Like,
yeah.
He spent 10 years here and 5 years there. And
yeah, well, he made a lot of claims, but he even set up expeditions that he would go out on. And then the expeditions would go disastrously, and he would abandon the ship at the next port. Like, he would sneak off the ship.
Yeah.
Like, it was there's a lot of great stories in the book that Lawrence Murray wrote that just tell you Lawrence Wright, sorry. That'll tell you quite a bit about, just his kind of huckster con man character.
Well, I remember the bio on the back of Battlefield Earth claimed he wrote all these movies, and there's only like one credit when it was actually looked into, and it was like a cliffhanger serial for Columbia called The Secret of Treasure Island, and that's all he ever actually wrote.
Really?
But this was like claiming he'd written the scripts for all these 1940s films because, hey, he didn't have the internet, so you couldn't fact check this stuff. Leonard Maltin's TV movies didn't list the writers of movies, so it's like you could get away with like padding your resume and faking it on all these movies you supposedly wrote, because who knew anything back then, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, he did write one cliffhanger serial, or it was based on one of his pulp stories. I think that was really the situation. I don't think he wrote the screenplay. But the documentary, even though it's a lot of talking heads, a lot of the footage is pretty compelling. And
yeah, it is. There's a lot of great footage of there's archival footage of Hubbard. There's footage of Scientology events that are like Triumph of the Will.
One of the most compelling documentaries I've seen about Scientology. Did you guys ever see the Panorama one did with John Sweeney?
No.
No.
Oh, that was done, I want to say about 04, 05. And this British journalist, John Sweeney, goes to America and does an expose on Scientology. And they just, and Mike Rinder, who's actually an Australian, who's lived in America for many, many years, who was a prominent figure in this Going Clear documentary, is there. And he is one of the right-hand men of that guy, Tommy Davis.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Has since left the church as well. So there's a mass exodus from the church. But Tommy Davis, and they constantly follow Sweeney. And then at one point, Sweeney just cracks and he screams at Tommy Davis. And, you know, they keep the Scientologists keep the composure to try and show just what a maniac he is. And it's an interesting watch. But a year or so later, 18 months later, Sweeney does another follow-up to that thing. But Mike Rinder has left. And who was the other guy with him? Rinder and somebody else had left Scientology at that time. And they team up with Sweeney and talk about what happened in the first one, how there was memos going out to crack Sweeney's will. And fascinating watch. It's up on YouTube everywhere. You can't miss it. Mm-hmm. But that, I feel that didn't help the church much either, of Scientology. That
I remember reading a lot of press. Well, I remember about them suing their people who left the church, like in one of James Randi's books from the 80s.
Okay.
Like, yeah, he had mentioned their system of harassment, and like that was one of the first places where I read about it. Like, I didn't know much about them. I think there might have been a 2020 thing that I had seen, which I think was even referenced in this documentary. But there's been several of those. But yeah, James Randi wrote about their system of harassment and stalking people and suing
Them. Like, their thing was never like turn the other cheek. It was always offense.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, they came at you hard. I mean, look at the one weird thing in the documentary is how they basically beat the IRS. You can't really sue the federal government, so they started suing individuals working for the IRS.
Right. Yeah,
the government submitted. The government bended. Like, they gave in.
We should take notes, everybody.
Scientology got a victory over them, and you know, you never hear these.
Out how to not pay taxes,
right? It's like if only Cliven Bundy could employ hundreds of lawyers to sue individuals working for the Bureau of Land Management. But it's just like they, and I actually kind of rooted for them in that scene because it's like, oh, so that's how you do it. You basically sue the workers, which I kind of knew anyway because that, you know, that's my profession. But
I was thinking about that while watching it. I was like, well played, Scientology.
Yeah, they figured it out. You sue the federal employees. You don't sue the actual government. And they won. And they are treated as a real religion in this country, which is crazy. Coincidentally, as their numbers have dwindled.
Mm.
So, but yeah, it is bizarre. Like, I had no idea why Isaac Hayes was there. I was like, Isaac Hayes, is he closet homosexual? I don't know. You know, I have
not,
no idea.
Not with 11 children, you're not.
Yeah, well, so like, I don't know. It's like nothing would surprise me these days. You know.
Well, and remember when South Park did the Scientology episode, he was basically forced to leave the show by the church.
That's right.
Like, because
was he forced or did he go on his own free will?
No. Here's the thing. I don't know for a fact that he was forced, but he had a radio show in Memphis when I was living down there.
Yeah.
And a person called in his radio show. And was saying, like, what do you think about the making fun of Scientology? And goes, look, man, he's like, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, he's like, they're satirists, man. If you take that stuff serious, you're a fool.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Then a few days later, he left the show.
Okay.
Yeah. Over the Scientology thing. I think that the church was like, look, man, you know, you've got to do this or else, you know.
That's some balls because, I mean, you don't tell, like, anything. He does what he wants. He's like,
apparently not. You know?
That's what I mean. They got some balls because it's like, you know, two people you don't tell anything, Ike and Johnny Cash. You don't tell them anything, man, because they just, no, you don't do that. Not in my eyes, anyway. But yeah, that's just me.
Or yeah, the, I was thinking that, like, of actors and actresses that actually joined the church and their careers were not necessarily the better for it.
Right.
One, I think, was Erica Christensen, who was in the movie Swim Fan, which I'd always heard was kind of a crap film, but
yeah, it was.
Some people praised her performance in it, like she played a good psycho or whatever, and her career, not really there. Yeah.
Well, and actors who were Scientologists, I don't think that's ever helped them. In fact, like, they've always kind of got the kook label attached to them, like, you know, my dad was always like, oh, you know, that actor's a Scientologist. They worship money. Like, that's what he always said.
Yeah. And Billy Sheen, he's a Scientologist.
Is he really?
Yeah. Yeah, he has been since forever.
Whoa! But yeah, no, it's my dad always thought of them as money worshipers. And but like any time there was an actor, my dad who was a Scientologist, my dad would be like, oh, he's a Scientologist, he's a money worshiper. And you know, and I think that's kind of, but that's kind of how regular people, because I kind of use people like my dad as like regular, you know, folk barometer, right. Like not like a definitive one, but that's sort of an opinion.
He's like your behavior compass. Right there.
Yeah, and you know, it's sort of like, okay, he's sort of a middle America typical viewpoint, you know, right. When it comes to culture. And, you know, you talk to a lot of people and they feel the same way, you know.
Mm. Yeah. But I was trying to think of a recent convert, and it was Erica Christensen and her career. I mean, she does a lot of TV stuff, but I it's hard to think of anybody's career got better. I mean, Travolta had a comeback because Tarantino wanted to put him in the movie.
Right. So Travolta's comebacks were always because he got a good role somewhere.
It,
you know?
It had nothing to do with Scientology, you know, picking his scripts or anything. It's like Cruise, I think, succeeds just because he had the charisma that the studios wanted, like especially Paramount, wanted to groom and work with.
And he always had good partners like Paula Jones. Not Paula Jones. What's her name? Paula Wagner.
Right, right. His producer friends kind of knew the project.
He had good people around him.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's not like I mean, he ends up with a franchise like Mission Impossible, and it's like he didn't try to make a franchise out of Top Gun, so that's some smart thinking, because that would have been impossible.
But what about Kirstie Alley with Fat Actress?
Yeah, she hasn't, you know, I remember everybody was talking about how hot she was in Star Trek II, and then nothing really, you know, she never, even when she got the Cheers thing, it was like she never really became much of a movie person.
No. Right. No. She was, hey, what about Runaway with Gene Simmons?
Where she was just she was basically TNA in that movie.
She was anorexic in it too. I mean, you look at her, she's like, holy shit.
She got upstaged by the other woman who was with
Cynthia Rhodes.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
She was
way
better looking than Kirstie Alley in that film.
She was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought she should have been a star, then she was in Animotion.
Should have been a store like Dee Snider. No, Dee Snider.
A store.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
but yeah, it's like
they moved.
That'll be our sound drop right there.
Yeah. We need to get a drop board in.
I've got a soundboard on this Mac, but I'm trying to work the bastard out.
We need to get a Dee Snider. I'm old drop. We need Eddie Trunk drops. You know.
What the fans?
The fans.
Yeah. And we need like, Slash.
It's CD's the best format.
Axel called me the other night during my show.
We're talking to Don Dokken over the weekend.
Look, Don Dokken's only back with Dokken for the money. One of the comebacks are for nothing but the money.
L. Ron Hubbard's got some really good pulp stories. I mean, the fans don't really they don't read them, but they're really good.
I mean, I like books. I like to hold it in my hands. I like to flip through the pages.
Battlefield Earth is a really thick book, but if you give it a read, it's worth it.
I read it on the way from Mount Jersey to Vegas because I hope to live in Vegas one day. Right now, it's not feasible with my kids, but I hope to live in Vegas one day. Ah, shut up, Eddie Trunk. I do want to hear that. I'm going to listen to that.
Shopping that metal show to other networks.
Guys, oh God. Oh, that metal show. I'm sick of hearing about it every week. Every week's an apology for the disappearance of that metal show.
You couldn't sell it to the Scientologists now.
You know what? Why don't you seriously just, there's an outlet for that metal show. Don't tell me you can't do it, Trump.
Just put it on YouTube.
Exactly.
Put it on YouTube. Use their advertising model. They'll get a million clicks. It's not that hard. Jeez.
I mean, make it as a paywall for 99 cents episode.
Right. Do a paywall on YouTube and boom, you got it.
Join the Kumia network.
Yeah, exactly.
They're friends
Kumia
with Jim Florentine.
Kumia went there and started his own thing. And look at that. That's a growing thing. It's like just,
hey,
you know.
Why not? What are you not going to have a paywall? What are you, a child? You can't go to YouTube?
Like he couldn't.
What are you got to be on regular television? What are you, fucking eight?
At least I'm sure he could sell it to Hulu and no problem.
Oh, look, he's waiting for them to knock on his door.
Right. He doesn't want to do all the work.
Yeah.
It's like, look at him. He doesn't look like he works hard.
He just delegates it like, ah, go get me that metal show on another channel. They can't get it. And he's blaming, yeah, he's just, I don't know. He's upsetting me.
Where he interviews Ace Frehley. I was like, oh, good luck interviewing Ace Frehley. You know, unless Ace is wasted going, you know. No.
No, he's been clean and sober 8 years, 7 months, 3 days, 4 hours, 8 minutes. It's just, you know.
Eddie's got
there's like an Ace Frehley sobriety clock somewhere hanging around on the internet. Because people seem to know exactly how long he's been sober, which is bullshit. I don't buy into that. Don't tell me Ace has a knockback of beer here and there. Sober means not rolling on the floor in your own piss and vomit drunk.
Right.
That's what they class as sobriety. Sobriety means no fucking alcohol whatsoever, but they'll have the odd beer.
Sobriety means no nothing. You know,
Ted Nugent, I've seen Ted Nugent have a beer as well before.
Which
Ted lied about.
He says he's had a beer every now and then.
If you remember the interview Ted Nugent did with Eddie Trunk about a month back, he goes, I only had two beers in my life. Blah, blah. I go, and he mentioned which ones they were. I said, well, actually, Ted, it's been three because I saw you knocking one back with Anthony Bourdain on, you know, his show once. So,
well, you will look at that that Icon show that they did on VH1 that Sam Dunn did. You see old footage of him playing guitar on TV in the 60s, and he's got a weed leaf on his guitar.
Oh, yeah. Look,
you know,
Ted.
Yeah.
God love Ted Nugent, but there's some.
I think there's a little bit of image curation going on there.
There is, yeah. for a guy who adopted a 17-year-old Hawaiian girl. I mean, really, don't bother hiding nothing, Ted. He'll never live that down. I mean, that chick was hot, but fuck, you know.
I will say though, you know, now we're talking about Eddie Trunk and Ted Nugent. I think that means the show's over.
Over or just off into tangent areas?
I mean, I don't know. I think we're pretty deep into tangent territory. I think we're in like the
It's hard to tangent into Dianetics because it's really a documentary, which you have to see to get all the details.
Yeah, you do.
Otherwise, we're just digging through the talking head interviews. I mean, there's some disturbing stuff in the movie that really turns you against these people. And then, but then you find yourself strangely cheering for them if you're of my political slant because they sued the IRS. And
I was cheering for them during that part. I was like, that's pretty, I was like, that's clever. You know?
Okay. Respect. I gave them that. Respect. I gave them a chest, gave them a fist salute. Right.
So what ratings would we give it? Stuart.
Why'd you sound Jewish when you said my name in?
What?
Why'd you sound Jewish? Stuart, would you like some roast beef?
Stuart, give me your ratings. Give me your shekels.
Would you like a Reuben's with some Russian dressing on that, Stuart?
That's because our co-host is Stuart Balk.
Yeah. Rockstar extraordinaire. All right. I will give it an 8.5.
So you give it the Fellini.
I'd give it the Fellini, and I'd give it the two big thumbs right up as well.
All right. Yeah. John, what about you?
I'd give it an 8.
I give it an 8 as well.
I think it's a good, compelling documentary. It's worth viewing.
And like, if you don't know anything about Scientology, it's a great little...
Yeah.
I think it's a great little intro into... If you've always thought, like, what the hell is Scientology? You know, give this a watch. If you got HBO... And like, if you have to have HBO to see it, right? Is it out on video?
Yes. It is here.
Yeah.
It's
okay. Collectible in America. It's out of print and collectible here.
Really?
Yeah, because of our Amazon analytics. Last I looked, it was like over a dumb amount of money. I swear I just watched it for the first time maybe 2 years ago, right? Or a year ago?
No,
about a year and a half, I think it's been out.
Yeah.
I saw it on HBO Now. That's how I saw it.
DVD's gone for 20 and the Blu-ray's 13. It's not that expensive.
Oh, the Blu-ray's not a bad price. So they're now doing a weird thing where the Blu-ray is now cheaper than the DVD.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've seen a number of things.
You can also watch it on Amazon Video for $4 to $5.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I think it's worth a look for that at that price. I think.
Definitely, it's worth doing that.
I mean, if as long as you accept it's a documentary, really, it's about a bunch of bastards, and it's basically a 2-hour documentary of bastardism. But they're all bastards. It's like you're not going to come away liking Scientology after that.
No. And, you know, it's called The Prison of Belief. I don't think it's going to be...
I do want to watch their wacky movies that they made back in the 60s and 70s at their little ranch studio. I think those.
Oh, definitely the ones that Miscavige was like an 11-year-old cameraman on.
Yeah, that's demented. That's like demented bad viewing that I don't think I could resist if those were available. So.
Oh, that would be amazing. You'd have to get to OT12 or some shit to
see. I hope
see
they
that.
Show up at a library sale one of these days, because I bet they're hilarious. But
no, they have to be incredible.
Yeah.
They're like those Protestant anti-computer religious movies of the 70s, like Mark of the Beast or something.
Oh, yes.
You know what I'm talking about? They were like, yes. I think they were called Mark V films. There was like a trilogy, but it was like they're all about how computers were the tool of the devil or some nonsense. It was just crazy.
It's like Evil Speak with Clint Howard.
Yeah, this is before all that. Yeah, they may have inspired Evil Speak. But
yeah,
they
exactly.
were like boring Christian sci-fi horror propaganda movies.
I have this poster. It's from that band Perturbator, and it has a computer, and it has a satanic star in the poster. It looks like a movie poster, and it said Satan is a computer.
Yeah, but that was the big thing in the 70s where computers were like Lucifer returning to Earth.
Say,
like,
man, he ain't no computer. You dig?
It's like, you know, they kind of run out of the commies to talk about, so they went for computers. That was the next
technology.
Yeah, technology is that ended up making our lives. I don't know if it really made it better, but it's supposed to improve our lives, and it was a tool of the devil. So yeah, I bet those Scientology movies are a lot like those. That kind of just weird, low budget, just
a bit
fucking...
like the Jerry Lewis, The Day the Clown Cried. Everybody wants
yes!
to see, but me.
Oh,
I could care less.
The footage I saw of that looked like
it
looks
such shit. It looks stupid.
I want to see it. I want to see it just to say I have. You know,
that's the whole thing. Everyone wants to say they want to see it. They want to own it just to say they've got it. I guarantee how many people are going to walk away and say, geez, that was a good movie.
It looks like a boring. The clips I saw, it looked like a boring piece of shit. But, you know.
I mean, it's interesting to see. Don't get me wrong, because it's just so talked about. And,
I won't see it. I'm just like, it's this legendary shitty movie. I want to see it.
I tell you what, if someone said to me, would you want that on Blu-ray or the Hardly Working? Give me Hardly Working any day, please.
About when you coming back, Red Rider?
Oh, I've given up on that. only not coming out because they can't secure the doors as People Are Strange song. I betcha. It's the only reason why they can't get it.
You're right.
Damn music publishing rights shit. Upsets me.
All right, guys. I think we've gone clear. I think our thetans are clear. What do you think?
I'll be clear once I get to the toilet. That's not trying to make a metaphor for Scientology and shit. I'm just saying I'm busting the go. That's all.
Yeah, yep. You gotta take it. Well, just gotta take a Hubbard.
That was not Stuart who said that, by the way. Yeah,
I need to evacuate the old thetans. You know.
All right,
get the swords out of my body.
Yeah. All right, Cyclone.
And with that, I'm going to say adios, Xenu.
And I will say MAGA, dog.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time.
Fifteen years.